You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's NL East beat reporters. We talk Braves. We'll be taking a look at whether there are any additional August moves coming and also the catching situation. Doing some big picture and future talk about the Miami Marlins, as well as looking at Marcell Ozuna's status and Dan Jennings' future. We talk Mets. We'll be taking a look at this amazing run, this literally unbelievable last week or so, and how the different pieces fit together in the infield and in the outfield. We talk Phillies. We'll be taking a look at what the past month might mean to Ruben Amaro's future, and what the Phillies might still do, but especially with Chase Utley. And when we talk Nationals, we'll be talking about the bullpen, the rotation, and the question that might be starting to loom at shortstop. Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter Bill Ladson. Bill, it has been a tumultuous stretch here for the Nationals. As we speak, they're now two games out of first place. One of the things that I believe really strongly and that I always observed is that for the most part, big league ball players separate today from yesterday from the day before. That is, whether they won or lost, great or terrible yesterday, you don't get to the big leagues unless you can just treat today like a whole new day and take your at-bats. With that said, this is a team with a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure, and a team a lot of people frankly expected not just to win the NL East, but to run away with it. They're now two games back with about 8.5 weeks to go, if I'm doing the math right. And so my question is, what is the vibe any different? Is anybody squeezing the bats a little tight? Is there any tension, or is the attitude normal in the Nationals clubhouse right now?
I would say right now, Matthew, it's normal. Matt Williams is taking this one day at a time, really. But we have to admit, though, Matthew, things have to improve, especially the offense. The offense is the reason they're behind the Mets right now. And obviously the bullpen, I'm not talking about Storen and Papelbon. I'm talking about the rest of the bullpen has to improve. And if they can improve, they can catch up to the Mets.
Yeah, that's one thing I actually had further down the list, but since you brought it up, let's go ahead and talk about that. This team has a very good back of the bullpen. And
Right. With
the way the rotation is expected to throw, that should really be enough. I think most of the time you're really expecting the starters on this team to get deep, to get 6, 7, sometimes 8 or 9 innings.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening, and it's exposing that they really continue to have a lot of questions in that 6th and 7th inning stretch. They've cycled a lot of guys in and out. Do you see them looking to make maybe one more add from outside the organization in August? They got their closer, but do you still see them maybe trying to bolster that bullpen even more over the next few weeks?
I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, Mike Rizzo is known to make August deals, but who's available? I mean, I don't see them getting a big name reliever, to tell you the truth. But they need a guy who is consistent, and right now they're just not getting that consistency. And what also doesn't help too, Matthew, is that their starters are not going deep in the game. Now, if you look at Gio Gonzalez's record yesterday, you know, his line is not bad. It's 5 innings, 2 runs, but he threw a lot of pitches, man. He threw like 95 pitches, and that's too many. So the pitchers, all the starting pitchers have to, you know, somehow, you know, go deep in the game and throw less pitches.
Right. I think that's a really big key. And you mentioned the offense, and I think a lot of fans look at the offense, and that was essentially what doomed them last year in the postseason, that they didn't score more runs. But you know, this team is going to – it should have a very good offense, but this team is really – was built to go as far as its rotation takes it. And right now, and look, this rotation, I don't think anybody's actually worried. I think if when we talk in 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the rotation throwing the ball well again. But with that said – this rotation is not doing what it's expected to right now, and that, frankly, even includes Max Scherzer, who, you know, overall has been brilliant this year. He's having a great year, but even he has hit a little bit of a speed bump. How much different do you think everything looks for this team with something as simple as Scherzer getting back into a groove, Zimmerman starting to go 7 innings, and getting this rotation to what I think we all expect it to be and believe it will be?
You know, after talking to Max Scherzer, I have to believe that it's all mental. By that, you know, like he has been upset that he has walked 6 batters in his last 2 starts, which is not bad for him, but to him that's too many, and he feels that it's a mental grind right now trying not to walk people. He doesn't like to walk anybody. So I just think that it's a mental thing with these pitchers. And if they can get it right, I really believe they can go deep in the game. And but they need help, man, from the offensive standpoint and the bullpen standpoint.
It reminds me of something that you occasionally see. And look, I think, sometimes fans and we in the media, sometimes we see this when it's not there, but I also think sometimes it is real. And I saw it a couple times in St. Louis when they didn't have a great offense. And sometimes what will happen with a pitcher is a pitcher doesn't believe he's going to get four or five runs. If a pitcher believes he's only going to get one or two runs, then he suddenly starts thinking he has to be super fine, can't give up even one run, has to be perfect every batter rather than just making pitches. When you see guys not getting deep into games, when you see a guy like Scherzer who doesn't walk anybody walking guys, when you see – Gonzalez isn't the most efficient guy in gym, but when you see Gonzalez needing as many pitches as he needs to get through five innings, do you think there's a little of that going on? Do you think these starters are trying to be too perfect because they feel like if they give up even a couple runs, they're not going to win?
Yes, I believe that, because if you look at the Nationals' offense, you know, they can't beat – the opposing team's best pitcher. I really don't believe they can beat them. And it seems like what's been happening lately, they've been scoring, like, let's say, two runs in the first inning, and then they shut it down right after that. And why that is, you know, I have no idea. And as Jose Lobaton said, he wished he had a magic pill to stop it. So I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to find a way to be consistent on an offensive standpoint, because right now, Matthew, they are not a World Series offense right now. And I think for these pitchers to win, they need the help from the offense, because they can't be perfect all the time. We've been seeing that lately. And they need help from the offense for sure.
How much of that do you think is going to come just from Worth and Zimmerman getting some at-bats, getting back to game speed, and just kind of – essentially going through almost some equivalent of spring training for them right now? Do you anticipate that within a few weeks those guys will sort of normal out some, and in doing so will really be a big part of the remedy for this offense?
Matthew, I would hope so. I mean, obviously they're rusty, but it's not just those two guys. You have to include Anthony Rendon. Ian Desmond is still horrible. I mean, there's no beating around the bush about that. And these guys have to improve. To me, Wilson Ramos has been terrible. I mean that from the bottom of my heart, from day one, catching, defense, and offense. So it's more than Worth and Zimmerman. Yes, they need to improve, but there are a lot of guys on this roster from an offensive standpoint that need to improve big time.
I guess why I bring up those two guys in particular is, you know, Desmond is so deep into this funk this year that it's fair to wonder what you're going to get from him this year. I mean, he has obviously, as recently as last year, shown really top-notch ability, but this is not a couple of weeks for him. You know, Ramos is a good player, but has never really been a top-caliber star player. He's been a good offensive catcher, but he's never been a guy who was a star-caliber player. You look at Worth and Zimmerman, you see guys who you expect that if they are healthy, they will hit. And Worth in particular is such a valuable source of on base. I guess what I'm wondering is, those two guys, the hope is that it really is just rust. And I guess what I'm asking is, if you get those two guys, you don't have a full lineup, but it would seem that would be an awfully big boost for this lineup.
Yes, I think it is rust. In Zimmerman's case, though, you got to ask yourself, how long is this rust going to last? And the reason I say that is because he's still having foot problems. As a matter of fact, he's off today because of a sore foot. So I don't know. I mean, you would hope that things would get better for him. Worth, you know, Worth is the last person that I'm worried about, only because I expect him to get hot soon. And you know, he's a big on-base percentage guy, as you said. And walking, he's getting a lot of base hits. So I'm expecting something big out of him before this month is over, by far.
So there's a question that's starting to percolate a little bit, and it's not exactly front and center yet, but I'm starting to see it asked, which means certainly you're starting to hear it asked. And it has to do with shortstop, and Ian Desmond obviously has been a really core piece of this team for as long as they've been good, frankly. But
right.
I think we all know who next year's shortstop for the Nationals is. And,
correct.
And Trey Turner is tearing it up at AAA. He has speed. He is a different kind of player, a guy who might bring a different dimension. How far are the Nationals from at least asking that question as to whether it's time to start finding some at-bats for Trey Turner at the major league level?
You know, I asked someone in the minor league side. I can't name the person because it was off the record. But, you know, they plan on keeping him in the minor leagues for a while. I would say he would be a September call-up. I think they're going to give Ian Desmond every chance to break out of the slump for this month. But I think if things don't work out, we'll see him we'll see Trey Turner by September for sure. There's no question in my mind we're going to see him in September. Trey Turner, I mean, from what I understand from Jason Worth and Blake Treinen, this guy can really square that baseball. He's really that good. And he's very competitive, too, especially off the field as well, even in card games, from what I understand. So from what I understand, this guy is really going to be a winner once he gets to the big leagues.
The first line on my notes here reads, so, I mean, what just happened? And I think that's kind of the question, because the entire story of the Mets and the perception and seemingly fan interest and everything has radically changed in almost exactly 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's been probably, you know, I struggle to describe it because the 10-game homestand that they came off, that they ended last weekend, was one of maybe the most ridiculous homestand I've ever covered. It had pretty much everything. It had drama. It had incredible games. It had news all over the place. And it just, by the end of it, the entire outlook of the Mets season had changed. They had made four trades. They had gone, and now they're a first-place team, and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, you get to that final weekend of the homestand against the Nationals, and the fan base that had just been a complete sleeping giant, I think that's pretty clear now, it was just yearning and waiting for the team to go ahead and have a stretch like this. They woke up, and all of a sudden, Citi Field was rocking like Shea Stadium in 2006, and it was just a really fun atmosphere. I think for the first time, probably since 2008, the last time the Mets had legitimate playoff aspirations, people are genuinely excited about this team. Not that it's not a team without weaknesses, not that it's even a team that's better on paper than the Nationals at this point, even though the Mets are in first place. But this is a team that all of a sudden, you know, you go from, well, it sure would be nice if the Mets could make the playoffs, to it would be disappointing if they don't.
Can you point to, and again, it's hard to pick out any individual thing within this week and a half, but with the fan reaction, because well into a point where they were really in this and really a factor, the fan base seemed very hesitant, reluctant to believe, reluctant to commit, and frankly reluctant to enjoy what even before then has been, you know, one of the better seasons in a few years. Was it getting the Cespedes deal done? Was it Wilmer Flores' game? Is there one point you can point to where this went from Met fans being so hesitant to really even enjoy, never mind believe it, to really sort of getting into this?
Yeah, I would point to the Cespedes deal. I think that has to be it. Because this goes back not just a week or not just a month or not just a year. Throughout Sandy Alderson's tenure as general manager, throughout the recent history of the Mets, for as long as the specter of Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi scheme and all these financial questions have loomed over them, there's been a bit of a perception from fans that, you know, we're not going to buy all the way in until we see the commitment from the front office, from ownership, that they're going to meet us in the middle. You know, a couple off seasons ago when the Mets signed Curtis Granderson and they signed Bartolo Colon, people were excited about those moves, but there was a sense at the time that it was like, well, let's just make one more big move and then we'll get really excited and we'll be all the way in. And the Mets never did that. And I think people kind of came away a little disappointed. It wound up being a disappointing season last year. And I got an almost identical sense at the trade deadline this year. They acquired Kelly Johnson. They acquired Juan Uribe and Tyler Clifford. The Wilmer Flores game happened. People were happy. People were getting excited about the team. But there was still the sense that there was one more move to be made. And the Carlos Gomez deal falling through the way that it did, it just created this bubble where the Mets had to do something. And if the trade deadline had come and gone, and again, the Cespedes deal was not consummated until 3:47 for the 4 o'clock deadline. So as recently as 13 minutes before the deadline, the Mets didn't have a deal done. And if 4 o'clock had come and gone last Friday and they hadn't done anything, it would have been an entirely different story. It would have been more just upset, moaning, people, and rightfully so, disappointed with the direction that the team's taking, even if they had been winning. Now, all of a sudden, you strike for one of the best players available at the deadline, if not the best player available at the deadline, and it changed everything. I think all of a sudden people bought in. I don't know the figures, but I think walk-up sales, at the ticket window for tickets that weekend at Citi Field had to have been off the charts. People are excited. People love the move, and it just totally changes the outlook. A team that had great pitching and was struggling to score all of a sudden, again, not that they don't have weaknesses, not that this offense is any sort of juggernaut right now, but they go from fringe contender to legitimate contender. And I think for the first time since really 2008, when they had gone out after a disappointing 2007 season and acquired Johan Santana, I think for the first time since then, the fan base really feels like they're getting met halfway on this thing.
And from a practical baseball perspective, the sequence of moves is really interesting because there are a lot of pieces that, at least to me, are not entirely clear how they fit, and there's going to be a lot on Terry Collins to make them fit in the best way possible. It sounds like, let's start with the outfield, it sounds like Michael Kadire is back soon. Does that necessarily mean Conforto goes down, and once that happens, how do they make first the outfield pieces fit together with the various ones they have?
Yeah, I think that probably means Michael Conforto goes down, and he actually did a really nice job while he was up here, but the Mets have high hopes for him and want him to play every day, which he wouldn't be able to do now with Kadire coming back pretty imminently. It would have been a big issue, but the one thing the Mets didn't 100% realize when they made the Cespedes trade was that this guy not only can play center field but wants to play center field and looks through a few games like he's pretty good at it. That was one of the big factors why they wanted Carlos Gomez, because they wanted a guy who could play center. And now with Cespedes doing that against right-handed pitching, it frees you up to do a lot of things. You don't have to move Curtis Granderson. You don't have to play him in center, which the Mets were unsure about. There's a lot more playing time for Kadire. You can sit Juan Lagares a lot of the time and have him come in as a defensive replacement late in the game for Kadire and so on and so forth. So that really solved a lot of issues for them. And then the infield has been sort of a mix-and-match du jour for Terry Collins. They've got a lot of third basemen on the roster now. They've got a lot of second basemen on the roster now. They've got a lot of platoon guys on the roster now. And what it's done is it's helped Terry to keep guys fresh, to rest guys, to bring defensive replacements in. We saw Daniel Murphy get a day off this week. We saw Kelly Johnson get several days off this week. Juan Uribe has started a couple of games but mostly come off the bench and done a nice job in that role. So it's just it's this situation now where all of a sudden you're not starting the same eight guys every day regardless of how much they're struggling. And then you look down late in the game and instead of a bunch of guys on the bench who, maybe are there just by default because you don't have better options, you've got legitimate major league hitters on the bench now regardless of who starts. So it has been a mix and match thing. I think Terry Collins has done pretty well with it so far, and I think you're going to continue to see more of the same over the final 2 months.
Mark, after that big, complicated, perplexing deal that I still haven't completely gotten my hands around, the Braves basically held steady. Did anything really tempt them? Did anything come close, or were they basically done once they made the Oliveira deal?
Well, I think, once they made that Oliveira deal, the only thing left to do is go ahead and take a look and see if you can move any of your veterans here with waiver wire deals, namely A.J. Brzezinski. or possibly Johnny Gomes if somebody wants to add some to their clubhouse there for the stretch run. But that may happen during the latter part of the month. I think what you're seeing here on the field, you know, is basically what you're going to see the rest of the season. Maybe we'll see an appearance from Peter Moylan in September. He's a guy who's, you know, obviously been a very popular figure here in Atlanta, coming back from a second Tommy John, and he's pitched okay here lately for Gwinnett. He just hasn't pitched back-to-back days, so he's probably more of a September addition. But I think, you know, what the rest of the season is, let's take a look at what we have for the future. You know, obviously, Oliveira, they're hoping to get him in the lineup here within probably next week, 10 days, that they were hoping maybe here with the next, by the beginning of next week, they would he would begin a rehab ascent, get him out there. Soon after that, they're hoping that Freddie Freeman's DL spin only lasts a week. All of a sudden, you've got those two cornerstones, middle lineup cornerstones, corner infielders that you're looking forward to building with. And then, obviously, all the young pitchers are going to continue to get a feel for what the rotation will look like.
You touched on this, but specifically with Pruszynski, do you anticipate seeing them try to move him, or is it just a case where if somebody calls and really wants him, they'll listen?
Yeah, I think that it'll be more of a need base from another team. If another team calls and says, hey, we'd like to stretch on. I think I talked to AJ about this last week. I said, hey, look, you know, you're loving your time here. You know, this is, you know, it's been great for you to be near your family, that they've been able to travel up from their Orlando home. He's been able to be close to John Hart, a guy he's known since about the age of 14 or 15. They've become pretty good friends. It's been a great setup for him, and I think it will be a great place for him to be next year.
Joe, it has been a rough year for the Marlins, but in particular, it has been a rough couple of weeks here. 2-10 in the last 12. Not the kind of thing they were hoping for. And it seems like it's both sides of the ball. It's not one thing letting them down. What are you seeing from the Marlins in this rough stretch they've been in?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of say it's already eye toward 16, but, you know, it kind of is moving that direction where it seems now, you know, lineups, players, evaluations kind of going on. But, yeah, simply put, you know, the starting pitching hasn't been particularly good, and the hitting has been consistently not good all year, you know, say Giancarlo and D and moments with Etch and so forth. But, you know, it's a team ran against a really hot Mets team, and they kind of exposed them a little bit more, their weaknesses. And, you know, they traded away two veteran starters, so now they're going to be looking for, you know, other guys to come up and show that they could be rotation parts moving forward. And, you know, they got to step up and do the job. They got to go deep into games. Relievers got to, you know, do shutdown innings, and, you know, it's kind of a collective, you know, no one's getting the job done.
You touched on this a little bit, but to what extent is the remainder of this year going to be about seeing what they've got for 16?
Yeah, I think it's a good bit. You know, I think that, you know, they're still, obviously, they are always saying the belief in the core, and unfortunately they haven't had the core on the field, you know, once, you know, all year. And, you know, even, you know, they traded away guys that they thought could be part of this core. So, you know, you basically went a whole year not seeing what you kind of intended you were hoping to see, you know, and that would be Stanton on the field with Jose and you know, rotation that included Heron and Latos and, you know, and so forth. So now, you know, they got to get Stanton back, and who knows when that's going to be. It may be later rather than sooner. You got to get Ozuna back up from AAA at some point this month and then kind of roll it and see, of these eight guys, you know, is this the core to move forward with, or, you know, some guys going to weed themselves out? They got to look in another direction.
You mentioned Stanton, and nobody's really ringing panic bells, whatever. Now I'm to horribly mix about four metaphors, but he is clearly not where they wanted him to be. What is the level of concern in Stanton's recovery right now?
Well, the one thing that was consistent, Matthew, when he had the handmade phone kind of removed and that whole area kind of cleaned out back on, I think it was June 28th, the injury happened on the 26th, was these guys, you know, people have had this surgery. It's a matter of their pain tolerance to get back out there, how much pain and discomfort. the fact that his hands are so important to his power, and he swings a bat so hard that, you know, he's got to be pain-free because that's what makes Stanton. So the 4-6 window might be good for a guy like D. Gordon, you know, not wishing on anybody, but, you know, a guy that's not hitting the ball with such force. And, you know, a guy like Stanton who's mashing everything, that swing is so, you know, that bat speed so ridiculously, you know, fast, and the power so much there that it's got to be pain-free. You know, the thing they got, Matthew, is they're not fighting for anything, so it's not like, oh, gosh, get him back and let's go catch the Nats and the Mets. You know, it's get him right, and if it's 5-6 good weeks to end the year of Stanton rather than, you know, maybe 6 with him at 80% or 90%, it's just get him right and see what he can do and be Stanton again, you know, for the final 5-6 weeks of the season.
Todd, does anything change at all as far as the front office and the future of the front office? And, I'll just be specific, as far as Ruben Amaro's future, after Amaro seems to have had a pretty good July?
You know, I definitely think his chances have improved. I don't know what those chances are, but I think at most, or at least, it's better. It's a coin flip right now whether or not he comes back. If you had asked me that question a month ago, I would have said, boy, Andy McPhail's coming in here. He's going to want his own guy almost for sure. But, you know, Pat Gillick, who's, you know, kind of the outgoing president, that told me on Sunday, thought Ruben did an excellent job. He thought the front office did a great job. And, you know, I asked him, you know, are you going to go to bat for Ruben with Andy McPhail? He said, I don't need to go to bat for him. He said, Andy's been here last month. He's seen everything that's transpired. So, you know, if you read between the lines, you kind of get a feel that Andy McPhail might have liked what Ruben has done. But then again, you know, he could still at the end of the season go, you know what, Ruben, I really thought you did a great job, but I still do want my own guy. But going back to what I originally started saying, I certainly don't think he has hurt his chances. I think he has helped his chances. And I think the door is definitely ajar for his return.
How has this sequence of deals been received in the home market? Because, I think it's been mixed nationally, but I think basically the reviews have been pretty good. Again, the Hamels deal seems very good, but it's also, you know, fans often think they're going to get everybody in the world in a team's top five prospects. Has Amaro's perception in the home market changed at all over the last month?
Well, I think fans have looked at those deals, and they are pretty pleased overall. But you're right. I mean, every fan has his or her own take. Some people wanted Joey Gallo and some of the other top prospects in baseball for Cole Hamels, but you can only get what somebody's willing to give you. But overall, I think Phillies fans seem pretty happy with the packages of players they got for Hamels, Diekman, Papelbon, and Ben Revere. And, you know, that said, I think most fans are still frustrated with the way things have gone over the past couple of years. But I think the ones that really pay close attention look at these trades, and they also see kind of the improvements that have been made in the farm system over the past year or two. They see some pretty good prospects coming up right now. And next year's AAA team in Lehigh Valley could be the first one I recall in years that is actually going to be a prospect-laden team rather than just a 60-year free agent team. And that could mean good things for the Phillies down the road.
Do you foresee any additional, we'll start with small moves between now and September 1st. Do you still think they might move somebody like a Francoeur, one of those kind of moves, or do you think that those moves are probably not happening?
I certainly think there's a chance. You know, in talking to people before the trade deadline, I asked a lot about Francoeur because he was playing pretty well. And the feeling was, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in August. But the Phillies are so focused on making sure they got the right pieces for Hamels and Papelbon and Ben Revere that, you know, they kind of pushed, I don't want to say pushed Francoeur aside, but unless something really presented himself that made a lot of sense, they weren't going to really rush into that. So Francoeur continues to play well. He would seem to have a lot of value to a team looking for a right-handed bat off the bench. So I certainly think that there's a possibility he could be traded. You know, Aaron Harang is still out there, but he hasn't pitched well. He's been on the DL. He got knocked around a little bit this week. So I think he, at this point, unless somebody got desperate for starting pitching, he's probably going to stick around. And of course, you know, the big name everybody's worrying about is Chase Utley.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks for listening.